Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to The Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferraci, your health and wellness resource, where you get the whole scoop and nothing but the scoop.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. We are The Whole Scoop, Health and Wellness Radio here on Blog Talk Radio, where our guests are always highly credentialed in the topics we discuss. You know, that's, if you've heard us before, you know that that is the stipulation for being on this show. Our guests must be credentialed so that you, I am able to present you with the most accurate information that I can find. So I am your host, Carol Ferraci, a registered licensed dietitian. I just give up on telling you how long I've been practicing, so I'm not going to do that. But you can find me at naturallynutritioninc.com if you really want to find out. It's there. I encourage you to find it. Tonight's show is a fun show, but yet it's so informative, and I'm so very grateful for it. We're calling it Positively Awesome Rehab for our furry family. And yes, that sounds, you know, wonderfully fun and everything, but trust me, we have a lot of information to give you tonight. So if you've got animals out there and you want to know more about what to do with them for rehab, this is the show. So let me get through the business and then I'll tell you who we have on, because I can't wait to tell you. While our guests are highly credentialed on the topics we discuss, it's always recommended to seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions discussed on this program. And you know, that goes for our furry friends, too. The call-in number is 347-855-8894, 347-855-8894. You can also direct your questions and comments to our Facebook Blog Talk Radio group page. Please join us. Tell us what you like to hear. Tell us if you like to hear what, if you like what you're hearing now. If you have questions, just, you know, join the group. See what's going on. It'd be great. We have a WholeScoopRadio.com page where you'll find more information on our guests. I believe that's up and running now. We had a little problem with it earlier in the week, but I think it's up and running. If it's not, please let me know, but I checked it earlier. It should be fine. And follow us on Facebook with The Whole Scoop Radio, 347-855-8894. We will take questions a little bit later on in the show. If you want to ask a question, remember to press the number one to get in the queue so that I know, because I got this board that shows me that there are phone numbers, people listening. And if you want to ask a question, you got to press the number one. Then that sets off a little queue to me. And when we're taking questions, I'm going to call out the last four digits of your telephone number so you'll know that you're the one on the air. So I think that takes care of everything. I am so thrilled to tell you that we have a new guest to The Whole Scoop tonight, and she is Dr. Lisa Mason. She is a doctor of veterinary medicine. She graduated from Auburn University in 2012 and went on to attend the Canine Rehabilitation Institute and the CHI Institute with certificates as a canine rehabilitation therapist and veterinary acupuncturist, respectfully. Dr. Mason moved to Florida in 2013 to begin working at Florida Wild Veterinary Hospital in Deland, Florida, as an integrative rehabilitation and exotics veterinarian. In July 2018, she opened Florida Veterinary Rehabilitation, a standalone veterinary rehabilitation facility in Central Florida, where she treats a variety of conditions, including pain, osteoarthritis, soft tissue sprains and strains, orthopedic and neurologic surgical rehabilitation, conservative management of back injuries, neurological disorders, and sports evaluations. She has successfully rehabilitated high-level competition canines using regenerative medicine, stem cells, and platelet-rich plasma in conjunction with rehabilitation therapy. So now it's my turn to add a little bit to that bio, because it's a fabulous bio and I'm thrilled that she's here. But I'm going to tell you that I know firsthand that this is Dr. Mason is the real deal. She's amazing as a rehabilitation specialist. I've seen her. She's worked wonders with my own dog, and I'm more than thrilled to have her tonight. And I'm even more elated that I'm going to share her with you guys. So here she is, Dr. Mason.
Hey, thanks, Carol. Here? Thank you so much for the accolades. Can you hear me?
I gotcha. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome to the whole scoop.
Thank you. It's great
so
to be here with you guys.
Yeah. So, you know what? Everybody who listens to this show knows that I was talking to Dr. Mason. I'm just going to kind of tell them about our previous conversation in a minute. We were talking, and I usually start the show with a bunch of statistics and whatever, and there just aren't enough. There's a lot of research for rehab with animals, but I don't believe that it's a topic that anybody really ever thought of. And I'm just going to start by using myself. You know, when Duke, my dog, got hurt and tore his ACL, I immediately in my head, and I've done, you know, holistic nutrition and alternative situations and all kinds of things and traditionally based, my immediate reaction was, oh, he's got to have surgery. And, but for the holistic vet with whom I was speaking, I would have never known that there was even an option for rehab for him. And it was a fabulous option. And what a blessing, because what I learned from you and your staff and watching him strengthen his entire body instead of one area being treated and everything else having to overcompensate was just phenomenal. So maybe you can kind of talk, we can start out with that a little bit about why this is relatively new or not, and, you know, help me out here.
Yeah. So canine rehabilitation is equivalent to human physical therapy. And it's a newer approach to our canine patient. It really started in equine or horse medicine about 20 years ago now. And, you know, you've heard about racehorses that have to be, you know, shot on the track because they have a fractured leg. Well, some folks said, you know, what if we can rehabilitate them back and be able to allow them to use that leg that they've broken or have damage to? And they started by, you know, putting them in a swimming pool with a treadmill. And that improved fracture healing that helped them out with movement. You know, horse people love to use physical medicine to be able to help their horses. And that's something that I even growing up working with horses, you know, understood was just the thing you did with horses. And then they moved it on to canine sports medicine primarily, and helped these agility dogs or performance animals to get back to full function by doing physical therapy techniques. And then we moved it into our post-operative patients. So these guys that have had surgery, why not try and put them in the underwater treadmill? And let's get them to strengthen faster without weight bearing. And that worked out pretty well. And then you've got some brilliant physical therapists that have joined in from the human side, joined into the canine side, and started adding in various things like joint mobilizations, even massage techniques that can make a change, you know, change the way that the patient moves, can change pain control. And then people started jumping on the more alternative bandwagon more recently and have wanted a more drug-free approach to pain management. And physical therapy, acupuncture, chiropractic are ways that you can do that. And now we've got this huge push in America to become opiate-free. And now we're really having to reach for physical rehabilitation to be able to do that. So I have seen this general switch within the last 10 years of medicine, of canine medicine, going away from just being vaccines, Remedil, take the tramadol, rest the dog, your dog's never going to be better again, or you have to do surgery, or you have to euthanize your dog. That was pretty much, even 5 years ago, those were options. And so now we have other options. I maybe cannot afford to do a $3,000 surgery on my dog for a cruciate ligament rupture, or now I can do rehabilitation therapy as an option for less money. It may take a little more effort, but it's less money. Or we can, you know, now take our patient that's had surgery and be able to get them to walk again. So it's just become a different quality of care that Americans and people around the world are wanting for their dog. And so now we've got to use all of our tools. And I will tell you that I've seen people want better care for their dogs than they do want, than they want for themselves. Most of my clients are familiar with physical therapy, but they don't want to do their exercises. They wanted their dogs to do their exercises at home. But trying to get them to do it, it's a little harder. So it's actually a really cool phenomenon in veterinary medicine that's happening right now. People just want more. They want better. And right now, canine rehabilitation is the fastest growing industry in veterinary medicine at this time.
Wow. Wow. Well, you know, we only have an hour.
So, I know, right?
There's a lot. There's an awful lot to talk about there. I mean, when geez. Okay, let's start. Let's just start with basic pain management, okay?
Yep.
You know, just the drug alternative to pain management in itself is fat. I think you help me out here, but I've noticed throughout the years that people who have animals, we've tended to believe, we've been trained to believe that our animals respond differently to more harmful things. Like, oh, no, that doesn't really hurt them. They can handle the yard insecticides and things like that. It's fine. You know, it doesn't really hurt them, but, you know, it does. We just have a way of believing that our animals are absolutely resilient, and they're not. So just something like pain management, we also are not, I might be way off base here in doing a collective opinion on this, but the thing is that we don't tend to believe that our animals have pain like we do. Because they don't respond like we do. They don't whine like we do. They don't cry like we do. They bear it and they just deal with it. How is it then that you know here comes the question now. The question is, what kind of education is out there to help people with that component alone? Because I think since it is the fastest growing area in veterinary medicine. I think you kind of got the surgical alternative covered. You got the opioid alternative almost covered, and you know people can relate to that and can tangibly wrap their heads around that. But the pain issue for me, based on what you just said, is more like how do you get people to become more aware of the fact that the animals are in pain? They may not just be exhibiting it the way that you and I would.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think we start by looking at who a dog is. They are, you know, they live by instinct. So if you are in the wild, let's say, start showing pain the way, say, maybe a person would, which is, oh, that really hurts. I got to stay in bed for the day, or I need to, you know, just take it easy. I can't do my job. The dog's going to get eaten. Okay, so when we go to the basics of how their body functions, they're much more instinctual than we are. So if I show the pain, then potentially something's going to eat me. So they're less likely to show it. And we see them show pain a little bit more than we would say, like a rabbit or a bird, something that is a little bit less domesticated. So dogs are starting to show it a little bit more, I would say, than maybe your less domesticated species. But it's not evolutionarily beneficial for them to show pain. So that's the first thing that we have to understand. They are going to try and mask it. They're going to try and hide it as much as possible. The other thing is that I think whenever a dog is limping, I've heard people say, my dog's limping, but they're not in any pain. to me, that doesn't make sense, because if I'm going to limp, I will tell you that I'm limping because I hurt. I'm going to limp because
right.
something doesn't feel good. I may not have that sharp, excruciating pain, you know, because there's various types of pain. And we've even, this is a hard concept. Pain is such a hard concept because it is so subjective, and it is so such a personal question, you know, to the point where even in human hospitals, they have to do a picture diagram for your rating of your pain scale. But I
Correct.
Can't give that picture diagram to a dog and say, pick out which one is the correct one. I think the now the pain scale is like if you're stung by one bee versus like stung by a whole swarm of bees or something like that. You know, so a pain scale is very, very difficult to do with humans. Now, with dogs, the way that I pretty much do it is I let my hands do the talking. So if I press on a certain area, is the dog painful whenever I do something, say, like with a cruciate tear? If I challenge that dog's leg into cranial drawer, which is a movement that happens when the knee is placed down to the ground, if they turn back and look at me and are like, hey, I'm going to bite you if you do that further, then I know that they're in pain when they step. If they don't care when I do that, but there's motion in there, I know that they're probably not in super duper amounts of pain, but they're uncomfortable because the knee is moving. So that's for me as a veterinarian. For a lay person, The thing that you're really going to want to look at are when I touch something, are they, first of all, growling at me, biting me? Those are clearly obvious signs that something hurts. Are they whimpering? Are they hiding? You know, cats are notorious for this. They may hide more frequently. They may not come out for their meals. They may not use the litter box properly. For dogs, I tend to see them sleep more frequently, not play with their friends as much. They may eat less. In some cases, they may eat more. They may lick themselves excessively in certain areas. There are some people that actually think that lick granulomas, where the dogs are excessively licking certain areas, are not necessarily a dermatologic disease, a skin disease, but they're actually thinking that they may be more of a neuropathic pain, where they are they're having some soreness or something from maybe, say, the neck or from the associated area within the spine. So that's something that is kind of a new and upcoming people are thinking about. So whenever a dog is paying more attention to a certain limb, you can look at muscle mass. Are they using that leg more or less? Are they having muscle spasms? So these are all telltale signs in the dog that I think people start picking up on subtly. Now, you may have that golden retriever. I'm thinking of a patient I saw today who is happy about everything and is going to just continue to be happy no matter if she can use her leg or not. It may be bothering her more, so she may be more resistant to go out on a walk. She may be able to go for 15 minutes and then she wants to sit down. That's another sign that she's sore. So cutting back on usual day-to-day activities. And anything that's abnormal or away from the normal is something that we want to pay attention to. And the very first thing you do is whenever they start doing that is you go to your regular vet and you have them do the exam. And you ask them to look for some reason why your pet is not acting normally. It could be something on blood work. It could be something on x-ray. It could be something on physical exam that they notice. And those are reasons, those can give us more information into where our pets may be in pain.
Wow. thank you for that. Because you just summed up in a very short period of time something that I've seen go on forever and ever, and we do. We just tend to kind of say, oh, they're not really in pain, and it's amazing. So, wow, that's amazing that, and you are so good at it. I've seen you firsthand just touch the right area and know exactly where to go, what to do, and what you're looking at. So,
Thank you.
It's it really is. It's phenomenal to watch you work. So, thank you. Tell us about some of the things. I mean, you're relatively new as a standalone situation. You've grown in leaps and bounds, and you continue to do so, and rightfully so. So just tell us how that all came to be. What are your areas of? I mean, I read it in your bio a little bit, but tell us about you and what. Yeah.
So I was really tired of euthanizing pets for not being able to walk. It was a very difficult thing for me to do as a veterinarian, and as a young veterinarian. I mean, I was only a couple months out, and I'm like, why am I euthanizing this dog that's down like this? And I'm like, there's got to be some reason or something that I can do to help this perfectly normal brain. Everything else is functioning, but their back legs aren't working. There has to be some reason, something that I can do for them. And I was encouraged by Dr. Holder at Florida Wild. She told me, she was like, go and get your rehab certification and see what we can do with this. And I'm like, all right, awesome, I'll do that. So I started school, and then I was like, ooh, I want to know more. And then I got acupuncture certified. Dr. John Humbert, who works with me, joined in as my chiropractor. And we started our very small little practice a couple of days a week. We would really focus on rehab, and then I was still a regular vet. And then I realized that I needed to drop my regular vet practice to really be able to have an appropriate standalone rehabilitation facility, because I wanted other vets to be able to send them to me and not worry about me taking their clients. And was able to build up enough business to be able to do that. And I thought it was going to be a slow process. I really thought it was just going to be a couple people at the beginning, and we were just going to very slowly open our wings. And the first day I opened, I was fully booked. So that was a little bit of a shock for me. And ever since, things have rapidly progressed, because this is something that our community, in our little community of DeLand, Florida, really, really needs. And we are the only standalone rehabilitation facility in Volusia County. And that's been a very awesome practice for me, because this is what I love doing. So I get to go to work and do exactly what I want to do every single day. So I think it's wonderful. But basically what I wanted to create was a facility where the dogs could come in. They didn't have to worry about getting their shots. They didn't worry about a thermometer going up their butt. They didn't have to worry about doing things that they didn't want to do. So a fear-free environment. I wanted it to be, I wanted to have rubber floors so that the dogs could walk. It was like the final time for them to walk in and say, oh my gosh, I have my footing underneath me. I feel really good about this. I wanted to build confidence in the dogs. I wanted to build confidence in the people that belong to them, if you will. And I also wanted to create an environment where those people were also very comfortable to be able to share with me their feelings, because people are very emotional when it comes to their dogs or their cats. And so I set up basically every room that I have is a living room style. There's couches. I sit on the floor all day long. I basically cuddle with the dog while I'm doing an exam. I have nobody restraining them. They leave feeling refreshed, and every single dog wants to come back and see us. We give lots of yummy cookies. I don't force the dog to do anything they don't want to do. And I think that's an important aspect when you're dealing with physical therapy, because we're asking these guys to do things that are sometimes uncomfortable. If anybody has ever done physical therapy themselves, they know that sometimes it's like, I don't want to go through that range of motion. No, that hurts. That's the reason I haven't been doing it. That's the reason I'm guarded. That's why my muscle mass is reduced. And so you have to ask them to go and do something that maybe they're going to be sore. It's a step above going to the gym and having a personal trainer. You know, somebody is sitting there pushing you to do one more rep, one more set. You know, you can do it. You can do it. The only difference is with dogs, we hold peanut butter in front of their face. With humans, you can't hold a donut in front of their face to get them to do physical therapy. So it's a much more chill environment. The owners feel so relaxed that I've had some people say, I could just fall asleep here while you're working on my dog. And I'm like, sure, go ahead. But you have to set up a chill environment. Yeah, right. You have to set up this relaxed environment to encourage healing. And that's what we want. I tell people, I say, I don't want to keep you guys as clients for long term. I will if you need it, but that's not what my game plan is. My game plan is to get your pet to the point where they don't need me anymore, where they don't need the drugs that they may be on anymore. That we can get them comfortable. And the way that we do that is we may have to start them on medication. And then we may have to get them to a point where they can wean off that medication by getting them stronger, building muscle. But my very first thing that I do when a dog walks in is I work on pain control. And that's why I think pain is such an important thing to touch on. Because if a dog is in pain or has inflammation, they're not going to use their legs. Not going to happen. So we have plenty of patients that walk in that are three-legged. We take care of the pain control, and then they walk out being four-legged. We work on that, then we build strength, and then we get back to full return to function. So whether that's going back to be an agility dog or going back to be a couch potato, or as we like to call them, the couch jumpers, which are the little dogs that jump on and off the couches constantly, which is basically like doing agility in your house. And we have to get them to full return to function at that point. And these guys I just can't tell you how much these guys love being there. And they're like, these are my buddies. And I have so many owners that tell me, they're like, yeah, we just tell them we're going to go see Dr. Mason and Dr. John, and they get all excited, you know. And I think that's cool. I think that's awesome because I love dogs and cats. And I think just being able to make their lives better, happier is so important. And I cry with owners when they lose their pets that I've been working on. I am there till the very last day. I've had people ask me though, if I will euthanize their pets, and I just can't do it anymore. That part kills my heart, and I will be there with you and I'll hold your hand, but I can't do that part anymore. Everything else I can absolutely, you know, take care of the pain management part of it, but and then love them till the end of time. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I can personally attest to everything you just said. And that is, in that you worked on Duke and then you ended up with another one of my dogs, Oreo, and you were working on them simultaneously. But it was to the point where when we were finished with our rehab, when those two were finished with our rehab, and as you well know, I had to bring all three dogs with me, it was a couple of weeks. It was like a month later when they were all still looking forward to Saturday mornings coming to see Dr. Mason. And I would get up in the morning, and they would be lined up at the door, in the garage, at the car, waiting to go. And we were going nowhere. So I will tell you what you said is absolutely true. They absolutely love coming to you. So
great.
But
great.
Let me ask you a couple of questions, a kind of a follow up situation. We do have someone who blogged in a question. She's got a 13-year-old Australian Shepherd. I'm just going to kind of take these as they come because we're just having a discussion right now. So I think it might be better unless there's a topic that you really want to get into right now. I'm happy to do that.
No, we can take the questions and that'll probably lead us into another talk. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, this is a 13-year-old Australian Shepherd who stopped eating. But kind of didn't stop eating for a long period of time. Says that it was like a day or two, but still really abnormal. And now is eating and drinking more so now, but they think it's joint pain. How can they, what can they do to tell?
Yeah. So I think definitely an exam from your regular veterinarian is the very first step. And that's important because inappetence can come from either pain or it can come from pancreatitis or gastrointestinal disease. You know, cancer is another thing that can potentially cause that. So I think that's the very first step. You want to make sure that everything else is fine before you deal with musculoskeletal. And then when you're dealing with joint pain, I think it's important to, especially for an older dog, to make sure that pain and inflammation is well managed. So again, regular veterinarian is going to be important because you've got to look at blood work before you start any meds, make sure kidneys and liver are functioning appropriately. And then at that point, you want to start off, once they're comfortable, get them moving again. Movement is so important. And I think if you ask any person that's in their 80s or 90s and they're healthy, they will tell you that exercise is the key to living healthily. I think even just taking a walk every day, getting your body moving. And for our geriatrics, the biggest thing that I hear from people is when they started hurting, I stopped walking them. And I said, that's absolutely not what we want to do. When they start hurting, you want to get them taken care of as far as pain management. So a nice non-steroidal anti-inflammatory can go a long way. And you get their pain managed enough that you can start slow walks. So I usually tell people I start at 5 minutes, 2 to 3 times a day. And if they can tolerate that without any pain the next day, we increase those walks by 1 minute each day. And then until we get to about 15 minutes twice a day. The key with joint arthritis is short, frequent walks. You want to keep that movement. So even if you're home, maybe working all day, it's good for you to stop every hour anyway and get up from your chair and move around. Take your dog out for a 5-minute stroll around the yard. And that will help them to stay more limber. The other things, once you get them comfortable on the medications, the next step is you start building strength. So whether that's you're doing a prescribed exercise regimen where you're building the muscle, especially of the large muscle groups, then that's important. Something super easy that I like to get my my patients doing is a little weight shifting. So even just kind of throwing them off balance a little bit helps to keep those stabilizing muscles, you know, healthy. The other thing I like to do is cookie stretches. Cookie stretches are where we take the nose and we go to the butt. So pretty much every dog is supposed to be able to smell and lick all the, you know, the private parts and stuff. And so if they're not able to do that anymore due to spinal arthritis or lack of, you know, just flexibility at that point, then even just getting them to do slow cookie stretches left and right, just lateral stretches, is so important. That helps them to start building up some strength in their paraspinal muscles or the muscles that are along the back. They're able to get some more motion in the spine. Of course, if the dog is not able to do that and they're not able to bring that head around, I think it's important for a rehab therapist, rehab veterinarian, to take a look at that dog and to determine if, you know, maybe chiropractic care would be appropriate. Acupuncture is fantastic also for spinal pain, maybe laser or any other modality that may be out there to help with pain control. And so I do think it's important for any dog that is inappetent to first have them looked at by your vet. But then after that, you can follow it up with some gentle exercises to keep them moving.
Wow.
Okay. I think that covers it. Did we answer your – if we answered your question, let us know. And if not, you have a follow-up question, please blog us and tell us again. Anybody else, feel free. We're just going to kind of keep going here. So, Dr. Smith, you handle a variety of things. And I know also the other work on that are just pretty much end of the line. If they don't have you and you can't give them hope, then they really don't have where to go. I know that you have a way. Like to share one of those situations?
Carol, I had a little bit of trouble hearing your question. Can you repeat that again? That's okay. It just kind of flipped in and out a little bit.
Sorry. I know that I don't know how much of that you've heard, you actually heard, but I'm going to kind of cut to the chase.
Barely anything.
Yeah. Okay. I know that you've taken on particular situations where these animals have had, like, nowhere else to go, and they've had no other avenues for which to take.
Mm-hmm.
And you pretty much are that end of the line for them. And if you can't help them, then they can't be helped. And
mm-hmm.
I know that you've turned around some of those. Can you hear me now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
I know
Thank
that you've turned around a lot of those. You want to kind of share one of your most challenging?
I have two specifically that come to mind. One of them I just rechecked today, so it would be probably more appropriate to use that one. This was a case of a rescue dog who had severe hip dysplasia and was overweight in the shelter. And a rescue organization pulled her from the shelter, and the veterinarian had recommended that they do an FHO, which is a femoral head osteotomy. And that's one of the treatments for hip dysplasia. And it's a surgery where you basically cut off the top of the femur, which is the long bone in the back leg, so that you no longer have bone-on-bone rubbing, so you don't get the arthritis and you don't have pain, and you create this false joint capsule with muscle. And they jumped in straight away to do that procedure, and the pup was in excruciating pain. Would not use her leg, did not act like a puppy, was completely muscle mass wasted. When she came in to see me, the leg was crossing over the front of her body so badly that I thought it was constricted so bad right there that there was no way that I was going to get any motion in this dog's leg. And, you know, I had a strong talk with the rescue and the foster, and I said, you know, if I can't do something to manage her pain in the next 4 weeks, then we have to euthanize her, because this is just not fair for the dog to live like this. And I've never wanted to say that to anybody before, but for that dog's sake, she was that bad. She wouldn't even hardly let me even touch the leg. So we started doing some very gentle rehab. I could barely acupuncture her without her screaming out in pain. We used something called an Assisi loop, which is pulse electromagnetic frequency, and that was very hands-off for her. We used massage techniques and joint mobilizations, and I used the whole gamut of Western medicine. You know, I used all of the things that I could use for pain management. I had her so many pain meds just so she could sleep through the night. And we constantly worked with her, and we did rehab, and we got her to put that leg down, and we got her to put that leg down. And we finally put her in the treadmill, and she was able to use that leg a little bit. She was still in a lot of pain, and what we ended up having to do was go in and we had to change the surgery a little bit and just alter the surgery. And then we rehabbed her back after surgery. And I tell you, I saw her today, and she was bright and bold and barking at everybody in the clinic and so excited. And I was able to actually touch her leg, bring it through range of motion. And, you know, we're about 4 months or so down the line, but that dog had life back in her again. And she just was, I've got this. And the rescue sent the money to do it. It was great. We do a rescue discount, but they spent the money to do it. And really just seeing a dog who I was like, this dog is in so much pain, there's nothing we can do, to now I even thought she was going to have to be on carprofen, you know, for her other hip that's not been operated on yet. I thought she was going to have to be on that for life, and she's been off of it for a month now. And we've got her on omega-3 fatty acids and a really nice joint supplement, and that's it. That's all she's on. And she's moving so beautifully. And so I was just very thrilled to see her so happy and having a life that a dog should have. Her muscle mass is coming back. She's using her legs. It was a fantastic opportunity for her. And so that was a really great story. And I do have one more really fast that was, oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that was a cool story. So I have this other story.
Yeah.
And this one, was really sad. So this pup was hit by a dump truck and was taken to a surgeon to have his pelvis basically just pinned all back together. It was really bad. And he called us about maybe a week after surgery, even it may not have even been that. And he had called a whole bunch of different vet clinics, and they were just like, it's just going to take time, just get him up, get him walking. And he's like, I cannot get him up and walk. I can't get him up to walk. And I tell you, he came in, and I took one look at him, not able to walk at all. Legs were swollen with edema. Pelvis is crushed, you know, and I was like, okay, let's go after this one step at a time. And I definitely, we dealt with wound management first. We dealt with the pain management. We dealt with the edema or the swelling that was going on. We dealt with the infection that was going on. And in 2 weeks, I had that dog up and walking. And the owners were just floored.
Wow.
They're absolutely floored. They're like, I can't believe it's, you know, been just a short period of time. And they were great. They brought him to me from an hour and a half away, and they brought him to me 3 days a week for the first 2 weeks. And then after that, you know, we've been working on him for like the last 2 months now, and he's walking really well all by himself, no assisted device. And he's just a miracle dog. He was not supposed to survive this. Like, this is unheard of. The owners are great. They're fantastic. The surgeon's great. Everybody that worked on this case was phenomenal. And we just love this dog. And he's happy and healthy now and moving really well. So that was a really cool case, too, that we were able to really jump in early on and get this dog some help.
That's amazing. I mean, I'm amazed at 2 weeks. That's just, I'm blown away by that. Amazing.
It was awesome. Really, the first day he took his first steps, it was like the coolest thing we've ever seen. We were all, like, the whole clinic was cheering. Dad came in and saw him walk to him, and Dad was just in tears, and I was like, it was the coolest thing, you know. It's just amazing when you see a dog just get that energy and stand up and say, I'm going to do this. And it was great. It was fantastic.
Wow. I'm still blown away. I'm not blown away by your expertise by any means, but 2 weeks, I mean, that's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
That's really
fun. It was awesome.
So tell me now you go the other route with rehab too, don't you? Like with some terminal issues, right? Do you do some rehab?
So I do some of the cases where we're looking for, we know the patient's going to pass soon, or we know that they are maybe in their last few months, and they are sore and maybe can't tolerate the medications anymore, I do a lot of acupuncture. I'll do some herbal therapies. We have, I've got some cancer cases that I work on. Knowing that these patients aren't going to, you know, maybe beat the cancer, but we want to find a way to help them to feel more comfortable to just get to the end of life. We use things like our pulse electromagnetic frequency bed, the Assisi bed, which I would recommend anybody that's listening that's not familiar with this technology to go to assisianimalhealth.com and look at this phenomenal technology. Use that bed while we're doing acupuncture. Go ahead, Carol.
Can you say that? Yeah, can you just say that one more time? Just say it one more time for people to get it.
Yeah, it's Assisi, which is Assisi, animalhealth.com.
Got it.
And they have a bed, they have a loop, and they have little even carrying kennels that you can use for smaller dogs and cats. And it basically uses magnetic therapy to be able to reduce pain and inflammation. I think it's a phenomenal way to reduce pain, and was actually founded in human plastic surgery to reduce the use of pain management by 60%. There's been some beautiful studies that have been performed using it post-operatively on intervertebral disc disease in dogs. And I think they're doing even more studies more recently, and really, really has helped tremendously for these patients. It also seems to help with cognitive dysfunction. It helps with wound healing. So it's got so many different uses, because all it's doing is it's producing a bunch of nitrous oxide in the body to reduce inflammation. So that you get that good feel good right after you use it. And I keep a loop at my house because I keep a collection of broken dogs. And so we use the loop whenever anybody's sore, anybody's hurting, just put the loop right on them and use that for them. And I have found that with my more terminal cases, that even giving them 15 minutes laying on the bed, on the assisted bed, has been life-changing for them. And so we're able to keep these guys going longer than they possibly could have. I'm treating a case right now of a dog with nasal squamous cell carcinoma. So I'm not going to cure the cancer, I can tell you that. But what I can do is, with my acupuncture and herbal therapy, we're able to kind of keep that nasal passage open so that his quality of life is more improved, so that he's not bleeding excessively. So that he's actually got an open nasal passage, and he does better after the acupuncture. And now we've started putting him on the assisted bed to help him. And he has an assisted loop at home that he uses to help calm him and keep his nasal passages open. So it's really great for those cases where we know we're not going to cure them, but we do want to help them, and it's not time to euthanize them yet. So what can we do in between there, other than drugging them up and sedating them? We can use alternative therapies to help with pain management and give them a little strength, a little bit of appetite stimulation. That's also very important, because eating, as we know, is very important for quality of life as well.
Mm-hmm. We have another question on the blog. What about CBD oil? Do you use any of that?
Yeah, so I've used CBD oil for a long time. And more recently have actually started to let people just use whatever products they're able to get their hands on, because the quality of products much better now after the farm bill was passed here in January. So, but I like CBD for general anti-inflammation at the appropriate dosing. And then it also needs to be titrated to effect. So some dogs require less, some dogs require more. A good quality product that's organic, that's grown in the U.S., that has been third-party tested. Those are your three criteria, in my opinion, of CBD oil. I think there's a lot of good companies out there these days, so I don't really recommend a specific company necessarily, but I'm happy to look at the products. The research is being done, and it does look really lovely. Colorado is definitely leading the way in research right now, but there's many vet schools coming out behind them doing the research. What we're seeing is actually really cool stuff with anti-cancer. And so that's a to be continued in discussion once the research starts really kind of coming back out on the anti-cancer. It's great for appetite stimulation, great for anti-anxiety, general just feel good. What it basically does is attaches to the endocannabinoid system in the body, which we find we do have natural CBD-type chemicals in the body, and the CBD just helps to kind of gather around those receptor sites in the body. It does, CBD and THC do work on the same receptor. THC is the psychoactive component, or THC, Delta-9 THC is the active component, or the psychoactive component, which most of the dogs don't need. you can use the CBD as the anti-inflammation. Some people are using THC in their studies, but right now it's not recommended to give dogs the THC because there is a toxic dose or toxic level for dogs. CBD is a nice antidote for THC toxicity. So if your dog happens to have too much of that THC, as it's become more legal in Florida, we're going to start seeing THC toxicosis more frequently. But CBD can be used as a way to reduce that toxicosis. So that's something that veterinarians, I think, would appreciate knowing. So I think it's good. You just need to make sure you're using an appropriate dosage for what condition that you're using. And I'm always happy to help people to titrate that dose to what is appropriate for their animal.
And how do they get in touch with you?
So they can email us at flvetrehab@gmail.com, or they can give us a call at 386-337-7106. And then our website is also up and beautiful. It's www.flvetrehab.com.
Great. Okay. We're going to go through that again at the end of the show too. So I just wanted to kind of get it out there now. I'm sure that was going to be the next question coming through. Let's talk acupuncture a little bit, okay? I've done all kinds of shows as it relates to human health and non-human health, and we've done acupuncture for a lot of different things. I did do at one point some canine acupuncture, and that was a while back. People are amazed to hear that you can give acupuncture to an animal. I guess mm-hmm. I've been doing it so long. I don't even think about it. It's just kind of like, yeah, that's right. So maybe you can talk about that a little bit. I know you've used it in your explanations on some of your, mm-hmm. your treatments, but let's just kind of give it its due a little bit here and say,
sure.
Hey, I mean, it's good for everything. I've never known acupuncture.
Yeah, acupuncture is great. I think acupuncture is a nice adjunct to other parts of Chinese medicine. Traditional Chinese medicine has four facets: acupuncture, herbal therapy, food therapy, and tuina, which is basically medical massage. And with those four facets of Chinese medicine, they work beautifully together. But acupuncture is basically, we talk about there are meridians that run throughout the body. So there are various organ systems which have meridians, and where you can find points throughout the body that correspond to those meridians. And of course, this was like 5,000 years ago. Very smart people came up with this. And they have translated the dog model from, I think originally they did the human model, then they did the horse model, then they translated it to a dog model. So it's a translational system. So we just take what works in humans and put it in dogs. And when you place these small, teeny tiny closed bore needles into certain points, they stimulate a certain meridian, or they have a specific thing that they do. And we have certain areas where they may be a global point, so that means that you hit one point and that's going to affect the whole body. There may be local points where we're treating a couple of points around the knee because the knee hurts. And then there's also other points that you can use within what we call the five elements theory, which is assuming that the body has seasons as the earth has seasons, and being able to, you can create a diagnosis and treat based on that diagnosis, that Chinese diagnosis, using the five elements. And so when we do the acupuncture points, there's a great amount of thought that goes into it that maybe is not shared with our clients. But you basically, to acupuncture a dog, you start with a Chinese diagnosis or pattern of what the body is showing you. So, for instance, with a torn cruciate, you're usually going to be seeing that they have a liver blood deficiency, which we won't go into completely on that right now. So with that said, I'm going to try and hit points that may help with the blood. I'm going to hit points that are going to affect the liver meridian. And then I'm also going to hit points that are going to be local points for where the pain is. I may hit global points to help with various pain spots. There's a spot that's called the aspirin point that I like to use. And so by doing that, we can stimulate the body to open up and clear out areas of stagnation. So what we know is energy movement should be fluid and should go throughout the body. And if there's an area where the energy has stagnated or stopped, we need to make that move. And the acupuncture can help to clear areas of stagnation. So, and we do see that happen. Whenever we're starting to clear those stagnant areas, the patient may start panting, they may start getting sleepy, they may pass gas, they may burp, they may yawn. And so those are ways that we can release tension or release stagnation. And most people, I've had people ask me, they said, how are you going to, how do you have to hold the animal down to put the needles in? And I'm like, no, not usually. I mean, because I always start with a permission point, which is the point where the body allowed me to place these needles. And then I very slowly will kind of go through and hit the points that I think are necessary, usually starting with the back points because those are easier for the dog to handle usually. And then I'll go to more of the peripheral points, so the points that are on the feet or on the legs, as the dog usually gets to know me better. And then there are opportunities for us to hook those needles up to an electro unit, which will then basically tap the needles to intensify that acupuncture session. I really like that for my neurologic conditions because I can help them to move better. I can help the muscles to calm down, and I can get the energy moving through from the head to the toes. So those are just a couple of ways that we can use acupuncture. The other way that, a lot of people will do it, it's kind of to-go acupuncture, is where we use, you can use B12 or you can use homeopathic concoctions in various acupuncture points to be able to stimulate the system or clear out that stagnation, and that's called aquapuncture. And then there's another way that people use it is moxa, which is just a smoking or smokeless, it depends on what you have, herbal that can be used around certain acupuncture points to be able to stimulate, again, those acupuncture points. So lots of different ways to practice acupuncture. I always like to mix it with herbal medicine and food therapy, as well as the Tui Na, which is what I am doing as a physical therapist and as a massage therapist. So.
Wow. And, you know, I feel like we just got started and really kind of talking about all the things that you do, and we're out of time. We're completely out of time. It's like,
oh,
we've got 2 minutes. So if you had to wrap up any, like, if you just wanted to do a real short, like, one sentence, two sentence thing on all the things that you're practicing to handle, what would you say? How would you say it? How would you like to end this show? And then before we do that, I would love to have you back if you're willing to come back, and maybe we can just pick a particular topic and kind of expand on that and be a little more educational if you'd like.
Sure, absolutely. That sounds fun.
Thank you. Okay, so how would you do that?
Okay. Florida Veterinary Rehab and Canine Rehabilitation Therapist across the country and the world. We help to get your pet back to a pain-freer, less painful life by getting them to move better, to feel better, and to promote health and wellness. Movement is the key to happiness.
Wow, that's great. Movement is the key to happiness. That's a great way to end the show. I should probably start it. We should have started the show that way and ended it. There we go. Wow, thank you. Dr. Nathan, you have been fabulous. A plethora of information that like we haven't even scratched the surface. So thank you. And I know just from the questions that we're getting still, I know that I know people want to hear more. So I look forward to having you back and can't thank you enough for tonight.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a great fun.
It's been great. Thank you. We'll be talking again. Everybody, we'll see you again in 2 weeks. Believe that we have a surprise guest in 2 weeks. I'm going to send out some promos on that one. And it's actually somebody, if you've listened to the show, somebody that you've known that you've been asking for. So I'm going to kind of send out some promos and surprise everybody. But for that, we're going to say goodnight, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks. Dr. Mason, thank you. Would you like to give out your contact information one more time?
Oh, sure. Website is www.flvetrehab.com, and email is flvetrehab@gmail.com. Phone number is 386-337-7106.
Perfect. Thank you. I'm going to try this outro music. If you've heard it, we've not had much luck with it for whatever reason. We keep reloading it and changing it around, and it's still not working. So we're going to try it again. And if it doesn't go, I'm going to say goodnight, everybody, and just end the episode and go from there. So hopefully keep your fingers crossed, and we'll see if we can get some good music out. Okay. Goodnight, everybody. And nothing. Okay. Good night, everybody. We'll talk to you again. Bye-bye.